everyone. Welcome to Inside Independent Publishing. My name is Christopher Locke, and I'm your host. And I'm also the IBPA member liaison, which is why, really quickly, I'm going to tell you about IBPA Publishing University is coming up. This is the last episode before that, and we are really excited. It's April 7th through 10th. And during this episode, you got to listen in. There's going to be an ad that's going to be like 10 seconds long, and there's going to be a discount code. It's 15% off, 15. So if you listen in, you will get 15% off registration. It's going to be a great conference. We want you to come. All right. So I'm very excited about this episode because one of the biggest things that IBPA tries to do is provide tools for success. And our members at independent publishers, author publishers, always ask about distribution. So this show, and by the way, the former host, Peter Goodman, did do an episode with our guest today about distribution, but that was kind of more general about the industry as a whole with distribution. I'm going to get this one honed in on real tips for indie publishers and try to get you to understand how it works so that your expectations are reasonable going into it. I want to basically make you feel comfortable and good about distribution. And I'm going to do that with our guests. So everyone, please welcome Independent Publishers Group Vice President of Publisher Development, Richard T. Williams. Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
I am very good. And as I said, I'm very excited because you are an expert, and I always love picking the brain of an expert. Really quickly, I want to make a point clear. Today, we're going to talk about traditional distribution. So that's, you know what, you're the pro. So real quickly, can you kind of tell us the difference between when someone does traditional distribution versus just like kind of wholesale distribution?
Traditional distribution is really referring to the market. So when we say we're a traditional distributor, we're trying to reach the book trade for you. That is wherever books are sold, basic, your fundamentally book, your book businesses, your Amazon and your Barnes & Noble and your Books A Million and your Ingram and your Baker & Taylor and all of the other specialty wholesalers and library wholesalers and school suppliers and anywhere that books are effectively dealt. Traditional distribution is a long-standing, I would say, decades of sort of systems put into place. I think once upon a time, I told Peter that there is an existing ecosystem and you are publishing into it. And that is what we mean by traditional. Whereas non-traditional distribution would be ways around the established systems. Maybe you have a select channel to sell into that is going to put your book out in a market, but maybe it's not the book market, right? So it just really depends. We are a traditional distributor who, for the most part, work with traditional publishing houses.
And we're going to talk today about both what author publishers and independent publishers can do through this traditional distribution. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's what I'm excited about. I'm going to ask some questions that I know our members are going to want to know. I think with traditional distribution, there's this kind of frustration where I think a lot of indie publishers, they're like, I have to get it. I absolutely must get it. And then when they don't, it's kind of a frustrating process. And so I wanted to ask, when you as a distributor are looking to take on, you look at this application and you see this publisher or author publisher, what is it in that application specifically that makes you go, okay, this is a good person we want to take on?
Several different answers there. But one thing I'd like to make clear that, you know, I talk about distribution a lot, obviously, and the main thing I think that needs to be made clear is for publishers, applying for distribution is kind of like applying for a small business loan. Like, I joke that I use the B word, you know, it's not books, it's business. And effectively what that means is that, you know, you need to be able to present your publishing program to us in such a way that shows us how your books are going to be saleable. Because we, as a traditional distributor, take a share of your sales revenue. And if there are no sales, you know, in the pipeline, meaning we're not going to be able to sell it easily, or you're not doing anything to help heighten the saleability of your products, then we're probably not going to take you on. And so what we look for is what kind of marketing you're going to be doing in order to make your books known to the consumer market, not to the industry. We'll do the industry marketing, but we're really concerned about, you know, what are you doing on social media? What are you doing to make people care about the book that you're publishing and to know about that book? What is going to drive consumers into the stores and our other, you know, customers to ask about your title? It's that kind of thing. So the presentation needs to be more than just, hey, here's my book, and here it is, and this is what the content is. It needs to be, and I am also supporting this book by putting, you know, $5,000 into a marketing account so that I can afford to buy the advertising and the publicity that it's going to require to make people know what I'm doing.
Yeah, and on that line, you're talking a lot about marketing. Are there specific types of marketing that you go, now that's a good type of marketing? Because like, you mentioned social media or consumers. So like when you look at the marketing, are there things where you go, they know what they're doing, that's the type of marketing that's going to sell this book?
It's funny because there are traditional things that publishers are supposed to be doing every time. You know, you're really, you know, okay, so let's go back. Distribution has long since rested on what we call a long lead model, which means that we're going to start selling and marketing your book probably 6 to 8 months prior to its publication, which for, you know, much of the IBPA audience and for author publishers, like that's not the model that they're on. They might actually already have the book in hand and already have some publicity lined up for it and want to be able to sell it right away. So that alone is putting you outside of the traditional model because you're not working with the long lead times that we expect. So the kind of marketing that we're looking for in those cases is the stuff that is going to allow us to go to our customers and say, yeah, even though we haven't presented this to you with that long lead, these are things that are really going to create demand for these books at this time. You know, it could be anything. You know, if you're writing a book about, you know, how to operate your own hotel and there's some hotel association that has 100,000 members and you're doing a mailing to them nationwide, that shows us that you're getting information about the book out there. And so we'll take that into consideration. We would love for you to have already, you know, sent sample copies in to all of the trade reviewers, you know, Publishers Weekly and Library Journal and all that kind of stuff, just to get, you know, that sense that you're going to have the right reviews and the buyers are going to be able to see that. But if you're not working on that model, we can't expect that. So then we'll just take a look at what you are doing. We just want you to be doing something.
Yeah. And with the trade reviews, then, so you just want to see that they have sent them in, but let's say they get them and they're not as good or...
Doesn't matter so much, right? Yeah. It's, what is that old saying? Like any publicity is good publicity. I mean, when you're talking about breaking a book in the market, people talking about your book, I mean, even if it's bad, is better than them not talking at all.
Oh, okay. That's a very interesting, okay.
Our assumption is going to be that the books that you are presenting to us are good. Like if you don't have faith in your product and you don't have other people who are endorsing your product, you know, to basically say, hey, this is a good book, then, you know, you're probably in the wrong business. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that there are a lot of books released every year and they're not all going to be good to everybody. But if they are not invisible, I think that's going to make a difference.
Okay. And what about that lead time? So, I mean, should someone, like you mentioned, sometimes they don't do that, but is it better for them to give you 6 months? Like you, that's really the model where they should come to you with the application 6 months before or whatever it is.
Yeah. No, Christopher, that's good. I think that if we had 6 months in advance for most of our applicants, we'd be much better off. But what IPG has specifically done because of necessity is we have created workflows inside our sort of internal processes for building sales materials and presenting books to accommodate short lead. So, you know, back in 2009, you know, we've had a long history with IBPA, having a small press distribution arm. In 2009, we retooled it, called it Small Press United. I was the director of that program for most of its existence. And at that time, we built what we call the short lead model, which was, hey, this person is applying today. They already have a book. It needs to be out in the industry. And that turnaround time for us is about 2 months. So, we do have a workflow that will allow you to get the book posted on Amazon and be kind of pushed into the existing sales routines in order to get the book out there. And that was specifically to accommodate the changing models that a lot of independent publishers and author publishers are using.
That's great. Yeah, I love, it's all about adjustments because this industry does change a lot. So that's great. I'm glad you all adjusted like that. And I'm sure it's been beneficial to a lot of indie publishers. So I also wanted to ask about then in terms of like let's say it's their first book. So like, are you all kind of more looking for someone who's more established? They have 10 books already done, and then this is their newest one. Or can someone really get traditional distribution and this is their first book?
I'm going to take that back to my analogy with applying for a loan at a bank, right? If you have the viable sales history that shows that you're going to have the income coming in, then you're going to get the loan a lot faster. So we ultimately want to know that your authors will have the saleability. If you've got an established author who's already written a book or, you know, even collaborated on a book and there have been some sales there, that helps in our initial presentations when we're telling our buyers, hey, this is an author who's proven that they can sell. So yes, sales history does help. But, you know, with a lot of the independent market, there are a lot of authors that are sort of untested, and we have to be able to take a gamble on them sometimes. So what we want to know in those cases is, what are you as a publisher going to do to help break this author into the market so that we're not flying blind trying to establish your author for you? That's where author platform really helps. Hey, my author hasn't written before, but, you know, has got, you know, 100,000 followers on Instagram and is really going to be out there. You know, we've got a virtual blog tour and, you know, whatever else it might be. So that's what I would say is that, yes, it's harder to sell a new author. We do need things positioned in such a way that we can help break that author. Sometimes it could even just be a little bit of a cheaper entry point in terms of price. You know, maybe that $14.95 book should be $12.95 because nobody's heard of your author before. And we do evaluate those things when we're reviewing our applications.
Yeah, it sounds like it's really important for these indie publishers and then the author publishers. It's the author really needs to have to be kind of known. Like they need to have like, I'll be on social media. Maybe they're a speaker who's been speaking about this subject and they've done, you know, talks all over the US. Like that seems to be a really important thing to kind of prove that they have, that they will be marketable and the book will be sellable, right?
Yeah, it's tricky actually when you're talking about author publishers. Now I'm talking about specifically people who've written a book and are publishing it themselves in order to kind of get it out there. And the reason why that's tricky is because a lot of author publishers are putting their books together essentially to help raise their own profile. So they're creating books as a way to be sort of marketing tools for themselves. You know, if you're a CEO or you have just sort of a life success course or anything it might be where you want to have a book to help drive and advertise you as a product, that's harder for us to sell because you're effectively saying, I'm going to use this as a promotional tool to sell myself, and then you're going to use it to sell a promotional tool. Like it really depends on what is the goal when you are publishing your own book. And I think that that's one of the things that we try to look at, is this product really going to kind of live on its own where the author can propel it forward, but it still has some cachet, or is it primarily going to be used as a promotional tool for that author? And we can't really promote promotional tools. So that's my clarification.
Hello, everyone. As promised, I'm about to reveal the IBPA Publishing University discount code. All right, so you're going to go to publishinguniversity.org, and during checkout, you're going to put in this promo code, IBPA podcast. Again, it's all one word, it's lowercase, and it's IBPA podcast. We cannot wait to see you at this year's virtual conference, which is April 7th through 10th, 2021. See you there, everyone. So clearly, some applications are rejected. So I wanted to talk about, like, when you get these, you know, these submissions, what is it when you look at it that there are a few things that kind of immediately you go, yeah, this isn't going to work?
The number one thing is the look of the book, not the content of the book, but the look of the book, which is, you know, it's so funny because we've been judging books by their covers for so long, right? The main thing is that we're a traditional distributor, which means that we're side by side with Random House and Simon & Schuster and Macmillan and all of those companies in New York who are creating professional products year round, you know, and basically own the market. And we have to be able to take these books and put them side by side with those professionally produced books and say, hey, you know, like, this is just as viable. This is still as important to the market as that one is. And if it doesn't look right, if it just looks inferior compared to the books that are going to be next to it on the shelf, that's going to really hurt its chances. So, you know, there is, and this is, I think, where IBPA really excels, is that it networks a bunch of people together who have that professional ability to design and package books. You know, if you are publishing yourself, get some input from a professional who packages books and has done it for a long time, so that the end product that you have is actually going to compete.
Yeah, and I want to mention that IBPA does have the professionally industry standards checklist, and it's like kind of like a general overview of what should be on the copyright page, stuff like that. So that people, I'll put that in the notes for the podcast. But thanks for mentioning that. That, you know, that there are standards, and that's, you know, what y'all are looking for. So then, okay, you're rejected. So, like, I guess you can reapply, but like, how long should you wait before you reapply? And like, as the distributor, like, are there things where you're like waiting to like kind of look for that they fix, and how does all that work?
I actually have to say that I have seen incredible strides from publishers when they get feedback that says, hey, you're this close. You know, if you just change these three things, sometimes in the same day, they'll come back to me and they'll say, okay, here, I've got a new cover and I've changed my price. And, you know, like, it will happen. The one reason why that doesn't work for some publishers is that IPG doesn't have the bandwidth or the resources to be able to give feedback to everybody that we reject. So I would say that historically, when I've reached out to a publisher who has submitted to IPG and we like what they do, but we're not quite ready to take it on, I will try to begin a dialogue that says, this is what we're really looking for. If you can do these things, come back later and let me know. And, you know, we'll be really all about it. If I'm not doing that, usually it's because it's too far from being right for us. And it could be something so simple. You know, there's no rule of thumb when it comes to the amount of time that it should take you to be able to revamp your book. I would say that the main thing you want to do is just be aware of your market. Go out there, look and see what else is being published into the category that you're publishing into, and look at how those books are, you know, packaged and priced and marketed, and kind of try to do the same thing, because that's what the traditional, you know, sort of book trade is looking for.
So you're going to get that application again, but you're probably going to remember it, and I guess you're going to look at, and like, is there like, if they sent it back 3 months later, I mean, at some point, are you all going to get annoyed and be like, they haven't changed anything, stop writing in? Or
I've actually done that. I don't do it as much anymore, but back at the sort of the halcyon days of the small press program, you know, we really tried to communicate with the publishers that were close. And sometimes I would get reapplications and I would say, I remember this. Sometimes I would pull up a previous application or an email chain and I would look to see, you know, what has changed here. And if it wasn't clear, I might then follow up with the publisher and say, hey, can you tell me what has changed since the last time we evaluated your program? Because taking the time to evaluate it and kind of, you know, running it past my sales colleagues to see what they think for each channel that I'm trying to sell it into, and, you know, looking online to see what the competition is. Like, all of those things take time and resources when we're evaluating products. And I'm not going to do that again if nothing has changed since the last time. So, you know, to answer your question, it's less about how much time it should be before you resubmit something, and instead, what has changed, and be able to pitch that. Hey, since I talked to you the last time, which was 2 years ago, I have since published 5 books, and these last 3 both got noted by this critical organization, and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Show me the progress, and that's the stuff that I'll take more notice of.
I'm interested. Are there people that are consultants for, like, telling a company, hey, we'll look at your application, and then they'll tell them, here's what we think is going to happen if you try to apply now, and here's what you should fix? Can they go to someone and ask them? Or?
Oh, yeah. I would actually say that for most of the independent publishers that, so I've met through IBPA, and I would say most of them are using some sort of consultation service, whether it's a marketer or just a publishing consultant. There are a lot of really smart and sort of book-oriented people who have had jobs in the book industry, which is obviously always changing. And as the industry has evolved, a lot of people have gone out on their own and become sort of publishing consultants. You know, I really could do that. I've done it long enough professionally to know that I could be a good consultant for publishers. It is a skill set that you acquire, and once you have it, I feel like you should share it. And there are a lot of them, and I met a lot of them through IBPA. So yeah, I would advise use somebody who's been there, who understands, you know, the way that the publishing world works, because that's going to be your best and easiest way to get your products up to a certain standard.
And by the way, people are getting a free consultation from you. Normally, it'd be like $7,000, and this episode's for free. So that's great. I wanted to ask, I find that the indie publishers sometimes feel like there's a catch-22, right? So they'll say, I can't sell a certain amount of books until I get traditional distribution, but traditional distribution won't take me on until I sell a certain amount of books. So is there anything you can, like, help them out with? Because they feel like they're stuck in that cycle, and then they're like, they can't get out of it.
Yeah, there is definitely that chicken and egg thing. I hear it all the time. Yeah. I do. I would say that the answer is that if your distributor is kind of being told that, yeah, you're not really selling enough to meet our standard, that's kind of a packaged answer. And you're not really getting the real answer, which is that, you know, maybe we have absolutely no way to be able to get this book to the sales level that it needs to be in order to be a lucrative endeavor for both of us. You know, you always have to kind of know what what is being said underneath, because, you know, in our industry, just like in everybody else's, there's politeness wins over harsh, you know, candid truths.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, where you see this most often is when publishers or authors even are trying to kind of befriend their local bookstore, and they go into the bookstore and they've got a book, and they go up to whatever manager they can find, and they can say, hey, you know, I live down the street and I really want you to sell my book. You know, that bookstore manager sees that probably 100 times a day. Mm-hmm. And there's just a level of fatigue over that process. So they might just kind of say, oh, okay, thank you. And not really give them the feedback of, yeah, this book doesn't look professional enough for my store. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the fine line that we have to walk. I would say if you are, self-aware, you're going to recognize that there are things about your book that might need improvement. And there's a way to ask that, you know, well, is there, as a follow-up, is there something I can do to change this, to make this more saleable for you, you know, whatever it might be. The chicken and egg thing, though, if a book is presented to the bank to get that loan, and there's no sense that they're going to be able to make the money on that, then the bank is not going to give them the loan. The bank's not going to take a risk and say, yeah, I'll give you a loan anyway. And sometimes we have to do that. And it might be not because of the fact that It might be regardless of the book specifically, maybe it's as a publisher, you just seem like a good partner. Maybe there's something that you said or did in the presentation that, you know, showed that you're willing to work as a partner and be able to, you know, adapt to the market that is going to be driving the interest in your book. There's all sorts of factors.
Yeah, I guess one question I had also then on that whole issue is, like, is there a certain amount of sales, or like is 5,000, you know, copies of a book sold, is that good, or is 10,000, like, what are you kind of like looking at of like, you know, that these are good numbers to prove that this book is sellable? Like, what, and then also, what are you all hoping for? I mean, do you have a, you know, this like amount where you're like, wow, if we sold 5,000 of that, then we would be good? Or are you really like every time like 100,000 books sold, you know, like what is the amounts that we're talking about?
So the savviest publishers have already put together sort of a P&L statement that shows how much they need to sell in order to break even on their investments. Mm-hmm. And I mean, honestly, for independent publishing, I don't get a lot of that up front. You know, people don't come to me and say, hi, IPG, I need you to be able to sell 3,700 copies of this book so I can earn my money back. Like, that doesn't happen, but we would like to think that over the course of a relationship with you, you would learn how to put those kinds of numbers together to help us manage expectations about what needs to be sold. You know, I for our clients now, our largest ones, you know, we expect that when they're presenting the title to us, they're going to let us know that, like, this really has to sell 15,000 copies, because that's how much I've invested in marketing. And I've done that based on a model that shows that the print cost is going to be lower, and it's lower because I have a distributor and I'm printing more, right? Like, all of those little valves that you kind of move in putting that model together have to be considered. I don't do it often, but there was a time where I kind of tried to put together a very loose model of, you know, what a publisher should be doing when they're calculating whether or not they can even afford a distributor, right? Because that's a big question. We take a share of your sales. So if you cannot print enough to get your print cost down, print cost is one factor that you have to be able to negotiate when you're seeing if you've got a distribution margin as well. But there are others, you know, that the retail price that you set it at is another thing that you can kind of move around. So I think we just want to know that you might have some expectations for sales, and we can work with you on that. There is no, for some publishers, they're going to have to sell 3,000 in order to break even. And for other publishers, maybe they only have to sell 500. So knowing that helps us.
I see. So that is something good to keep put in the initial application, is that concept of break even, here's where we need to be profitable. And that also proves to you all that, you know, they're thinking about these things.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And that's exactly what I mean. Like, that is one of those sort of flags that shows us this is a good partner. This is somebody who is in it for the business aspects and knows what needs to be done. And it gives us, you know, it's communication. It gives us that ability to be able to work with our partner on a level of, yeah, we understand what you need, and this is what we're going to help you do to get there.
Yeah, and not to talk you out of a job, but I thought it was very interesting where you mentioned the idea of maybe, you know, distribution not being a good fit. So, like, when are those times when, you know, these publishers, maybe it's not the right fit for their business model?
What I have seen more often than not is when people first get started, and maybe they're, I'm going to use very specific examples. They're publishing children's picture books, and that's full color throughout. And they have to, for whatever reason, they're printing them in America, where printing full color children's books at, you know, your local printer will probably cost you a little more, especially if you're doing a run of a couple hundred books or whatever it might be. When you look at that model, because of the sort of the base unit cost of what your book is costing you to produce, there is no margin for you to just give away, you know, a quarter of your sales revenue to a distributor. It's not there. You have to be able to adjust those things based on where the money is going to go.
Well, so crazy enough, it's almost a half hour, which is what we try to have the podcast at. I would be remiss if I didn't mention you were going to be a speaker at IBPA Publishing University. And you're clearly an expert on this. You've got all kinds of great information. So the name of your panel is called How to Prepare for Distribution, a panel to understand when, how, and where to look for distribution providers. So real quick, did you want to kind of say anything about your panel?
I do think it'll be worthwhile because if you are a publisher and you're interested in distribution, you're going to get me on the panel. You're going to get Bailey from Ingram. So you're going to be able to get more than one distribution house's sort of feedback on stuff. And you're going to get Michelle, who is a very established independent publisher who works with a distributor. And you're going to be able to get her feedback on the decisions that she had to make in order to land a distribution agreement. So I think it will be kind of like the next step to this conversation.
Well, you heard it here, folks. You cannot miss this panel. It'll ruin your career if you don't go to this panel. So everyone, please, during the whole podcast, there was one little ad that hopefully you heard, but I'll just tell you the promo code is IBPA podcast. And so it's all one word, IBPA podcast, all lowercase. And you get 15% off if you go to IBPA Publishing University and you register with that. Also, Richard, you're so connected to IBPA. You did a webinar that's called Let's Get Real About National Distribution. Yeah. And that is free in the IBPA archives. So our members, if you're a member, you can go and watch that. And again, you're such a wealth of knowledge. There's a lot of stuff in there, things that we didn't cover here that you should go and watch that.
Christopher, I think that one is the one that does kind of show those numbers that a publisher can tweak to find out whether the model works for them. So great. I definitely do recommend that.
Look, you're like the person to go to for distribution. I'm telling you, I really appreciate all this information. This was so great. I feel more knowledgeable, but I hope our independent publishers and author publishers listening, I hope they got a lot out of it. Thank you so much again for being a guest on the show and also just for sharing your knowledge. It's so important that you're willing to give people this feedback. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Christopher. I love the community, so I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, and thank you all to all the listeners. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast. And I want to thank IBPA for sponsoring the podcast and for giving me a job. I love it. So thank you, Richard. Thank you, listeners. And please listen to the next one next month. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Mm-hmm.